It was the first democratic election since the ouster of former President Hosni Mubarak. Millions of Egyptians went to the polls and are going for a second day of voting. This was a vote born in blood. The uprising that toppled Mubarak claimed 846 lives and injured 6,000 others. And recent clashes between protesters just last month in Tahrir Square and the armed forces have killed 40 people. And yet, many Egyptians went to the polls anyway, not just out of a sense of duty, but also filled with hope for the future.
I'm so happy. If you ask anybody here, I'll tell you, we are all happy, very happy. And this is the first step in realizing the goals of the revolution.
That was Egyptian presidential candidate Amer Moussa speaking to the AP. And we're joined now by John Line, a correspondent for our partner, the BBC, who just came from a polling station. John, what did you see?
Well, it's not as busy as it was yesterday. Huge crowds yesterday, but still a steady stream of voters going to the polls here. It seems to be a little bit better organised than yesterday. They've had a day to get their act together. Yesterday, of course, a lot of polling stations opened late and the ballot papers didn't turn up until late. So this time it's a little bit better organised. But I have also seen a lot of candidates distributing, or their representatives distributing their literature outside polling stations. That is technically illegal. Nobody seems to be stopping them. But what they're not doing, which I did see a year ago under Hosni Mubarak, is they're not actually blatantly bribing voters outside. So it seems a better prospect of a free and fair election this time round.
Well, let's talk about it's a free and fair election, but in some ways very chaotic. I mean, we're talking about an election in which there are dozens of candidates for people to choose from. Do the Egyptian voters feel as though they have all the information they needed in order to vote?
More than dozens. There were 146 candidates on the ballot paper at one of the polling stations I went to, and two separate voting stations, a proportional system as well. And on the list I saw, there were 15 different parties to choose from. Overall, there's more than 500 parties to choose from in that separate system. So you have to vote twice under two completely different electoral systems. So, of course, people don't fully understand it. There's only, even by the best figures here, just over 60% literacy in this country. It does mean that people are prone to a bit of coaching, if you like, from parties, from the better organised political parties. But nevertheless, people here are incredibly enthusiastic about it. And they all believe, everyone you speak to, better a flawed election than none at all.
Really? You know, because, John, it hasn't been that long since we thought the elections weren't going to be able to go forward. I mean, it because of what was happening in Tahrir Square, many people thought that the elections would be cancelled, that there would be violence on that day. And yet it sounds as though, although chaotic, the scene on Monday and then today is very different than people had expected.
Yeah, people above all just wanted to go out and register their votes. And I think the army is going to win some credit now, having weathered the protests of the last 10 days and saying they were determined to go ahead with the election. So the army now gets credit for that. The protesters, even though actually many of them did say they wanted the election to go ahead, the protesters are being seen as perhaps people who didn't want the election to go ahead. And so they've lost a bit of credibility. And those are the more kind of liberal-minded, we call them the Facebook generation here. So it's an interesting kind of swing in the balance of power. The long-term effect of this, though, is that people who've been elected have now got that credibility and got that legitimacy, and that's going to strengthen them in the battle against the old order, if you like, against the army and against people who were in power under the old regime. And I think this will, how can it fail, to push Egypt a little bit closer toward the proper democracy.
John Line is a correspondent for our partner, the BBC, speaking to us from Cairo, where he just came away from a polling station, Egyptians voting for their second day. Well, explain this a little bit more, John. What happens when these newly elected officials then come up against the ruling armed forces, who at this point are running the country? We won't have a presidential election probably until next year. And therefore, what kind of power will these newly elected officials have, and how will that balance out with the military?
Well, indeed, that's the key question. In theory, this is a presidential system, and so the president names the government, names all the ministers, really runs the show. And the president now is the army, because mm-hmm. they took on the powers of Hosni Mubarak. In practice, of course, they're not going to be able to steam on regardless once the vote's happened. And once the people have given their verdict and there's, for the first time, really, probably a freely and fairly elected parliament, the army will have to take account of their views, both in the way they form the government, in the way they form their policies. And of course, the parliament will choose the body that will write the constitution. So there's a lot of tussles for power ahead here. And it's a balance swinging back and forth from the army to the army. I think in this occasion, those people who get the most votes in this election surely will have more power in their hands as a result.
Well, and it's a little bit complicated as well, because the first part of parliamentary polls was Cairo and Alexandria, right? But these votes are taking place in three stages, and in fact, they won't finish until January, is that right?
And that's just the People's Assembly. Then there's the upper house, the Shura Council, and that won't finish till March. So it's an extraordinarily long process, a total of 24 days of voting. Now, they've done this because they feel they don't have the resources to do the voting all in one go. They want to have judges monitoring the voting in each polling station, which they have, which is something people here approve of. That's something Hosni Mubarak abolished towards the end of his time. So they will be a guarantee. They also want to have the ability to have enough security forces on duty in all the different polling stations. Again, if they held one big election across the country on one day, they wouldn't have the resources to do that. And we saw already the fairly chaotic scenes yesterday just in these limited elections they've been holding here in Cairo and other big cities. So they've spread it out. I think some people think that partly it's an effort to spin out the process a bit longer by the army so they stay in power longer. Well, rightly or wrongly, sooner or later the vote will be finished. And then the parliament chooses the assembly, 100 people, to write the constitution. And then there's a referendum on that constitution. And then, eventually, if that constitution is passed, we get to presidential elections. And the army's just promised recently those presidential elections will be by the middle of next year. But you can understand the scepticism. It's a very long, complicated process.
So, John, do we get more protests demanding that the presidential election be moved up, do you think?
What's happened in the last week is that even if the protests are perhaps running out of steam, they've given notice to the army. We're watching you. You can't just do what you like. We want a true democracy to come to this country. And they've given notice, and I think the army has seen and heard, that their freedom of manoeuvre is limited.
John Lyon, a correspondent for our partner, the BBC, reporting from Cairo on the second day of voting, which, as you heard, is a long process which won't end until sometime next year. John, thanks so much.
I'm Ira Flatow, host of Science Friday. For over 30 years, our team has been reporting high-quality news about science, technology, and medicine. News you won't get anywhere else. And now that political news is 24/7, our audience is turning to us to know about the really important stuff in their lives. Cancer, climate change, genetic engineering, childhood diseases. Our sponsors know the value of science and health news. For more sponsorship information, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.